Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
On this episode of Newt's World, my guest today is Brigadier General Anthony J. Tata. He retired from the U.S. Army, having served a distinguished military career of over 28 years, including commands in the 82nd Airborne, the 101st Airborne Division, the 10th Mountain Division. He served in Afghanistan, Bosnia, Croatia, North Macedonia, Kosovo, Panama, and Haiti. He is also the national best-selling author of more than 15 military thriller novels. The brand new installment of his Garrett Sinclair series is The Phalanx Code, and it tells the story of Garrett Sinclair caught in a deadly game between two tech moguls with Phalanx squads hunting him and those he loves. It is the kind of powerhouse military thriller that only someone who has Tony's vast military experience could tell. So I'm really pleased to welcome my guest, Brigadier General Anthony Tata. His most recently performed the duties of Under Secretary of Defense for Policy, the number three position in the United States Department of Defense, where he implemented national defense strategy. His military awards include the Bronze Star, Combat Action Badge, Ranger Tab, Master Parachutist Badge, and Department of Defense Award for Distinguished Public Service. Tony, welcome and thank you for joining me on Newt's World.
Mr. Speaker, it's certainly a privilege to be speaking with you and your audience.
You know, before we discuss the Phalanx Code, I thought we might go back and discuss your 28 years of service to our country, and really start at the beginning. Who encouraged you to join the Army?
Mr. Speaker, I grew up in Virginia, southeastern Virginia. My mother was from the Blue Ridge. My parents were teachers, and they certainly instilled in me and my older brother who went to the Naval Academy and my younger sister who is a teacher today, the sense of public service. And so my mother always said, Tony, whatever you do, always make a difference. And so with that in mind, and having a brother at the Naval Academy who was kicking for the football team, I had to do something opposite of him. So I went to West Point. When I graduated, it was hard. It was really, really hard. I wrestled and played baseball there. You know, I had this Elon image from all my time in Virginia, going to the battlefields and Lee and Grant and all the history in Virginia, whether it's Williamsburg and Jamestown and Yorktown or the Civil War with the Shenandoah Valley. And my mother's very close to some of those battlefields up there where she grew up. I went with this sense of pride and elan to that I came from a state where people had served in every capacity possible. And then that my mother's credo, always make a difference. And that got me motivated to go to West Point. And certainly when I graduated from Infantry Officer Basic and went to my first tactical unit, I sort of switched on. I said, I was an athlete growing up. I played on a couple of state championship baseball teams. And certainly I had these visions of being a professional athlete, and being a paratrooper and a Ranger school graduate, that became my version of being a professional athlete, serving my country on the most important field of all of them.
You had some remarkable assignments, and you were in some very, very different countries. When you look back on that, what do you think was the most challenging assignment you were given while you were on active duty?
I have to say, Mr. Speaker, that's a great question. The most challenging assignment I had was when I was 101st Airborne Brigade Commander in Kosovo, in command of Ukrainian and Polish battalions, a Greek battalion, a few of my own airborne battalions. And we were responsible for monitoring the border of Kosovo and North Macedonia, and also keeping the Serbs out of Kosovo. And so I had a separate brigade focused on the Serbs, and my job was to focus on the peace enforcement that was happening between Kosovo, North Macedonia. You had the Albanian rebels in there, and they were crossing the border, and they were ostensibly the ones that we came in to support, because the Serbs were ostensibly the bad guys. But the Albanian rebels used that umbrella of support as a method of attacking into Macedonia. And so it was this real tough geopolitical problem that manifested on June 25th, 2001. I was there. I had to lead my troops past Macedonian military lines into the defenses of the rebels who had penetrated into Macedonia, move them in trucks, and all brokered by NATO negotiators, one of whom I found out I knew once I was on the ground there. And certainly the Macedonian army would not let us out, because TV was showing us going in to help the terrorists. And all we were trying to do was defuse the situation. So there we were all night long, hooking and jabbing, getting shot at by the Macedonians, who we went in to help at the request of their president. And I'm on the radio talking to the general who I reported to. I was a colonel at the time. And he says, "Hey, man, you're on the ground. I'm just sitting here eating a peanut butter jelly sandwich. You figure it out." And he meant that in the best possible way. But he put a drone over. We figured out a route out. And I had British SAS Delta Force equivalent supporting me. But that was a long night. But I got every soldier home safely. We solved the problem. We defused the situation. I got all the NATO negotiators rescued and out of there. And at 5:49 the next morning, we were 100% accounted for inside the wire. But I would say that was my most challenging 36 hours or so in the U.S. military.
That's really wild. And of course, there are regions of the world where people have been cheerfully hating each other for very, very long periods.
That's right. That's right.
It's a little bit like the challenge police have if they go to a domestic problem and all of a sudden the wife and the husband are both attacking them for getting in the middle of it.
This was classic Clausewitzian wars, politics by another means. The rebels penetrated far enough to where they held strategic ground in a town called Aretinovo, and they were in mortar range of the airport, of the seat of government, of the presidential residence, of the U.S. embassy. All of my troops, I had a battalion protecting the airport down in Skopje. And so it behooved us to move them, right? And so when the NATO negotiators went in there, they had a list of demands. And they said, "Give this to the Macedonian president, and then you can send the Americans in to move us." The president agreed to it. We came in to move them. We moved them. We thought we were good to go. And then we had to fight our way out of there, because by then the big lie was being told on Macedonian TV that we were helping the bad guys. So, but it all worked out in the end.
When you were in Haiti, did you get any sense of what it would take to get that country to become viable?
Yeah. So my Haiti operation experience was as the chief of plans of the 82nd Airborne Division. And I wrote the plan with the team. We wrote the plan to jump 3,000 paratroopers in. We had the ship of stuff and all that. And if you recall, this was 94, and there were two options. There was the airborne option, which I was part of. I was on an airplane. And then there was the 10th Mountain on the Eisenhower option, where they came in for peacekeeping. When Colin Powell, Sam Nunn, and Jimmy Carter went in, we paratroopers thought, well, that's just to clear all the containers and fire trucks that had been disabled off the runway to make our job easier, and they're going to leave real quick. And there were like 2 days of negotiations and all of that, and we got told to fly. Clinton obviously was president, and we go about an hour out from green light. We're ready to jump in. We get turned around. We're told a deal's been signed. And so I never physically stepped into Haiti because I got sent back to Fort Bragg, now Fort Liberty. But I spent a year researching intel, working that plan. My sense was you really needed to reform the police force because Francois was in charge then, and he was a bad guy. The corruption was really deep. I don't know that Aristide was the right guy to bring in, but he certainly was available. And then Cedras, who signed the document and, you know, moved to Costa Rica or somewhere. Just deep, deep reform. You know, like most of these third world countries in the Caribbean, they've got to have ethics and values and all of that infused, because right now, you know, or at least then, there was no sense of duty or loyalty to the country. It was all take what you can get, kind of like the Biden administration.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
When you take off the uniform, you've had this terrific period of serving America, and then you get called back to work in the Pentagon as part of the official structure reporting ultimately to the President of the United States. How much different was the view from running around the Pentagon to being out in a military post where you're surrounded by people who are focused on the military?
That's a really insightful question. Serving as the undersecretary for policy, what you see is the importance of civilian control of the military. You understand, you know, as a young officer, you think, man, you know, 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, 4-star general, they're gods and they can do no wrong. And then you get on top of that and you're looking down and you're saying, you're not giving me, the civilian leadership, what I need, or you are a great job. And it really gave me a different perspective on the importance of dedicated professionals that want the best for the country to be serving in those positions. And it also taught me that you can brook no BS from any senior officer that may not care for the civilian leadership all the way up to the commander in chief. That's insubordination that needs to be dealt with immediately. And so regardless of the circumstances, regardless of what the media is saying, we have civilian control of the military, and whoever is in those positions, that's who's in charge. That tension was a great educator for me to be in that position, even for the short period of time that I was. And then the last thing I would say is that I traveled for the last couple of weeks to about six different countries, and the esteem with which other countries hold DOD and the United States is without fail. Yeah, I was gone during January 6th. I was in Riyadh staying with John Abizaid and meeting with Khaled bin Salman to sign a major defense cooperation plan. And even during all of that, the regard that these people held our country is just remarkable.
The other thing, which I was really surprised to learn, is you have a really big interest in education. I mean, it's kind of like I'm watching your career here, and you're going from career military to serving the Pentagon. And in between, you're also the chief operating officer of the District of Columbia Public Schools. Then you become the superintendent of the Wake County Public School System. I mean, that's quite a zigzag kind of approach. That's before you become Secretary of Transportation. Tell me a minute about the adventure in education.
Remember how we started. My mother said to always make a difference in that ethos of public service. And my father was a 30-year, 15-term state delegate in the House of Delegates in Virginia. He used to listen to your tapes all the time. I would come home from wherever I was deployed. I swear to God, he'd be like, man, this Gingrich guy is really smart. And he'd just be listening to your tapes, the contract with America and all of that. He was a beer and pretzels guy, a son of Italian immigrants, was asked to run, unusual last name, high school football coach, good record, all the makings of, you know, a winning ticket. And he won. And Pat Robertson's CBN is in that district of part of Virginia Beach. And he represented 15 terms, turned down a bunch of offers to run for Congress. And he says, where you kids grew up, that's where I want to represent, because this community has been so good to us and I want to be good to it. So it's that ethos that my parents instilled in me to always contribute and try to make things better than you found it. There were the usual defense contractors when I was leaving. And then I said, no, I want to get into education. Eli Broad, he had an education foundation. They recruited me to come in and go through a superintendent's training school because he believed that leadership was the key to unlocking the potential of public education. I agree with him. And Michelle Rhee was on his board, and Michelle was the chancellor of DC Public Schools, had just started, been there 9 months or so. And she called me and said, hey, Tata, I need a general to come in and run my business operation so I can focus on academics. And so I did that. And Michelle and I, to this day, remain very close friends. She was awesome. She was 37. I was 47. The Washington Post did a big article on how's this general going to work for a, you know, young woman and all that. It was crazy. And then Wake County, that's Raleigh, North Carolina, 15th largest system in the country, recruited me. They just had a change in 2010, Tea Party Revolution. School board went from Democrat to Republican. They wanted somebody to come in with leadership skills outside the system. Turns out I was that guy. Certainly, we did a lot of good there. And probably one of the most rewarding parts of my life so far has been implementing the programming within, you know, the 150,000 students, 170 schools, 18,000 employees in Wake County. We established leadership academies, young men's academy, young women's academy, a career tech academy. We created innovative programming. Think about charter schools within a public school system that could compete with charter schools that were outside the public school system. And I wanted parents voting with their feet inside the district. And it was effective. Last year, the two leadership academies had the highest proficiency rates and graduation rates in the state of North Carolina. That kind of stuff makes me feel good. I know that I made a difference. And then Pat McCrory called me up and said, hey, I just won being governor. Will you be my transportation secretary? I think it was more a move to take me off the chessboard because Tom Tillis was getting ready to run for Senate. And, you know, there are a lot of rumors about me and all that. And I got in line and then some things didn't happen that were supposed to happen. And, you know, here we are today, but that's fine.
I'm just thinking about the totally different application of skills from thinking about education to thinking about the state transportation system. Did you enjoy that?
I did, in part because Pat was such a transportation-focused governor, was such a big part of his platform. First of all, the leadership part is transferable. It's all about caring about loving the people you lead. I had 12,000 employees in the Department of Transportation. I had an airplane I could get around the state, King Air, that I would take to go visit with people, understand what they were doing, have them show me what's important in their engineer districts. You know, you're working with engineers, professional engineers, super left brain, trying to help them see the vision was the fun part for me because they do it brick by brick. And sometimes you need to build it from the top down. And there were a lot of great conversations, but so many good people that I got to work with in my time in North Carolina. I really enjoyed all those skills, whether you're talking to a soldier in a foxhole, a teacher in a classroom, or a transportation worker at the port operating a crane. It's all the same. You got to care about them. You got to understand what they need, and you got to resource them.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
With all of these skills, you pivot and you start writing. And you write fiction, which I think is vastly harder than nonfiction.
I agree with you.
What led you down that road?
You know, I had always wanted to write. I was one of these kids, two teachers as parents, that read a lot. And then I started reading, why am I so interested in what I'm reading? And, you know, how to write a book, how to write a novel, how to write a mystery, you know, Stephen King's Dante Macabre, On Writing by Stephen King, you know, several other books. And I just started writing. I remember Tom Clancy came and visited my troops one time. He was writing the Airborne book, and he was smoking like a chimney, and we were packing out for a jump, and he wanted to see that. You know, and I'd put this guy in, and there's Tom Clancy smoking, standing there talking to paratroopers with parachutes on. That's rule number one, is don't let any fire near a parachute, right? Because you might burn a static line or something. And so my sergeant major comes up and starts yelling at him, like, who is this guy? I'm like, Mr. Clancy, we're going to move him over here. But he said famously, if you want to be a writer, then write. So I started writing, and I've been writing most of my life. I've always enjoyed it. I love the creative aspect to it. And certainly Phalanx Code is book 16 for me with Sam Martin's Press, Macmillan. They're a great publisher. My editor, Mark Resnick, is fantastic. I've received great support from them and from Kensington Books, my other publisher that published a series of books for me. So I love the creative process.
Did you have any idea you're going to end up writing a series rather than a single book?
Yeah, I think I created a group of people that I wanted to base a series on. I like reading series. You know, it's that old saying that you're an author, you know, write what you like to read, not necessarily what you know. And so I like to read series. I like to read thrillers. I like to read mysteries. And so that kind of form, I got typecast a little bit as a former military guy. Hey, give me a military thriller. So I did some of that, but I also made a little bit more Jack Reacher, Lee Child kind of guy with one of my series. So, and I love it.
How many total books have you written?
16. This is my 16th published one. My first thing I ever wrote is unpublished. It's called The Last Gamble. And it's a story about a Heisman Trophy running back at West Point who gets caught in a mob point shaving scheme. And that's ultra fiction because it's been a long time since West Point's had a Heisman Trophy running back.
Still, one can hope. How do you conceptualize somebody like Garrett Sinclair?
Great question. Sinclair, I spent a lot of time drafting out his bio. I had talked to my agent at Trident Media, and when Sam Martin signed me to a new contract, they wanted sort of a new thing. And my agent said, Tony, you're a general. Give him a general, and you can make it about whatever you want, but make the protagonist someone that you can go deep on and reflective of your core values or whatever it is that you want. And so my agent and I had talked about this and I agreed with him. And so mapping out Sinclair, you know, he meets his wife in church in Fayetteville, probably near Bell Feed and Seed. He went to high school in Fayetteville, the son of a paratrooper, West Point grad. His grandfather was a ranger at Normandy. And that's actually how the Phalanx starts, is his grandfather scaling the cliffs of Pointe du Hoc. And so this lineage of military duty, which I do not have. My father served his 2 years in the Army, but I wanted somebody who had this measuring stick against him, something to live up to prove whether or not he wanted to prove that and create that sort of internal dynamic. And then he's got two children. And so my previous protagonist had been Jake Mohegan, a loner, former Delta Force operative, Native American from the Outer Banks of North Carolina. They could not be more different. Jake had no responsibility to anybody. Garrett Sinclair not only has a family and responsibility to them, but he has responsibility to all of his troops. He leads the Joint Special Operations Command. He leads a subunit of Joint Special Ops called Task Force Dagger that does presidential directed missions. And that's kind of the unique fictional part of this. And so he personally goes on these missions that the president, who in my development of the character, Sinclair's wife is a college roommate of who is now the president, Kim Campbell. And there's some question as to whether or not Campbell helped off his wife or not, which happens in the first book in the series. So there's that tension. And so I wanted multiple layers of tension, ultra responsible. And now in Phalanx Code, what we see is that he's been through so much in the first two books, and you don't have to read the first two to understand or get into Phalanx, but the country's politically divided. You have two tech giants. Think on one side, the worst attributes of Google and Facebook colluding with the government to consume personal identity, personal financial data to control people. And then on the other side, think Elon Musk and X, which is called Project Optimus, and Optimus co-opts Sinclair into helping defend his developers who are developing decentralized Wi-Fi, decentralized finance, all the DY, DeFi, crypto, all of that, helping people protect their personal information. So it's big tech against decentralized tech. And Sinclair gets caught in the middle of this. And in the meantime, learns a devastating secret about his grandfather who scaled the cliffs of Pointe du Hoc.
This isn't just purely military in the sense of violence and those kind of things. you really get into the whole issue of cyber behavior and the impact of the cyber world and how cyber warfare can evolve. How do you see all of that evolving and its impact both on our civilian lives and also on the whole system of national security?
That's what this book is really about. That's the theme of the book, is unchecked technological advancements colluding with government in a techno-fascist way is probably the greatest threat to mankind today. And that's what Garrett Sinclair and Phalanx Code is defending against. And when I think about in my personal business, in my private life, I work with logistics companies and defense companies and energy companies and aerospace companies. And the rate at which AI is changing just the information landscape is really breathtaking. And so here, what we have is sort of a fictionalized version of that, where the Phalanx Corporation has created a way to, every time you touch your phone, it knows where you are, it knows what you're looking at, it's listening to you. And I know a lot of that already happens, but take that to its logical extension, where you have zero privacy. All the cameras on your phone, your iPad, your MacBook are all looking back at you 24/7, your Ring camera, the constant surveillance state, and then all your personal data that they have to use against you. Did you pay every dime of your taxes? Arbitrary people. Think about the guy, Mr. Speaker, who was calling Twitter, some 30-year-old guy or whatever in the administration, calling Twitter saying, I don't like these accounts here because they're saying bad things about the president. Take them down. And Twitter took them down. That's the analog version of what I'm talking about. Now you just automate that. Like, okay, this is speech I don't like. This is somebody I don't like. This is somebody saying stuff that's counter to my narrative. Boom, it gets shut down automatically.
If you look at the Chinese Communist social credit model, that's literally parallel. I mean, it's the use of totalitarian knowledge. So if you're not behaving properly, you can't get on an airplane.
We're not far from that, I don't think. No.
I mean, I think it's fascinating. I think, frankly, your whole life lends itself to someday being an autobiography. I mean, what a memoir with all the different things you've done. As an Army brat, I want to thank you for your service to our country. And I want to recommend to our listeners to get a copy of your new book, The Phalanx Code, a Garrett Sinclair novel, which is available now on Amazon and in bookstores everywhere. And I have a hunch, once they get into your world, they're going to look at all those other books and decide they have to have them. But thank you very much for spending the time talking with us.
Thank you. It's been a privilege. And thank you for being an Army brat. That's a tough job in its own right.
Thank you to my guest, Brigadier General Anthony Tata. You can get a link to buy his book, The Phalanx Code, on our show page at NewtsWorld.com. NewtsWorld is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Garnsey Sloan. Our researcher is Rachel Peterson. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Penley. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. If you've been enjoying NewtsWorld, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review, so others can learn what it's all about. Right now, listeners of NewtsWorld can sign up for my 3 free weekly columns at gingrich360.com/newsletter. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is NewtsWorld.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, Every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.